On November the 16th, the Kingdom of Bahrain will play host to one of the most stacked cards in Brave Combat Federation history as the organization will return for its 18th event, featuring title bouts in both the flyweight and lightweight divisions. Today, we're going to focus on the main event as former UFC contender Lucas Martins battles former Desert Force champion and the Pride of Palestine Abdul Karim Al-Salwadi for the vacant lightweight title. Al-Salwadi joins me now. Assalamu alaikum, Abdul Karim. How are you, my brother?
I'm good. I'm doing good. How are you doing?
Alhamdulillah, my brother. Alhamdulillah. Now, you know, Brave is a growing promotion, and they've have acquired many television deals across the globe, including over here in the U.S. with Slow Combat and Fight TV and other platforms as well. So a lot of people out there may not be familiar with some of the talent on the Brave roster. So let's tell the fans a little bit about yourself. What really attracted you to the sport of mixed martial arts?
So, I mean, since I was a kid, you know, I always loved the sport. I used to watch UFC with my father, you know, back when I was like a little kid. And I come from like a martial arts background. Like my father, he used to be a karate black belt, and he used to also box. He was never able to make it to professional because every time he was getting ready for an event, you know, something happened. He tore both of his ACLs, so that stopped him from fighting. And, you know, back then these surgeries weren't easy. Like, you could recover from an ACL in these days, but back then it was, you know, it was a life, it was a career-ending injury. So, you know, I was just born and raised always, like, as a fighter. You know, my dad would teach me. I was always athletic all my life. I was always known as like the really athletic kid, you know, crazy cardio, crazy strength, you know, above average than my age. And that stayed with me up until like I was like 15, 16 years old. And that's when I was actually introduced to like my first martial art. I started off as Muay Thai when I was 16. And then, you know, I did that for about 2 years, just, you know, doing championship after championship. Like, I was rising very quickly, like, once I started, because I was already very athletic. I was already, you know, I had all the physical abilities to be a good fighter. I was just working a lot on my technique. I'm not going to lie, my first few fights, Muay Thai fights, were like brawls, you know, like, they weren't very technical. I was just using my athleticism, but then I started to learn and learn more, and I was just, you know, beating everyone in front of me. And I went to, like, Arab National Championships and all of that, and I won all of them. I finished my Muay Thai record as 22-1, and I was still, like, 17 by that time. So I had, like, 23 fights in 1 year.
Oh, wow.
And then I got into MMA. It was so funny because, you know, I was just like a crazy kid, just trying to, you know, always challenge myself. So I was watching TV once, and they had this like Desert Force promo on the TV, and, you know, they just had these like guys walking down, like 20 fighters walking down, and it was just really nice. And I was like, damn, you know, like, I want to do this one day. And then it was about like 2 weeks later, I saw on Facebook, there was like the guys from Jordan, representing Jordan, fighting for Desert Force. They were looking for sparring partners. So I was like, you know, whatever, let me just go get my butt kicked. But, you know, at least I'll get to train with these guys on TV, you know, at least I'll, you know, get to learn from them or something. Little did I know that I was going to go to that sparring session and like almost dominate these guys. Like, I was like 17 years old, crazy kid. I'd fight the guys, you know, a bit higher than my weight class. I was like a small featherweight. I was fighting like a welterweight and a lightweight. Mm-hmm. So these guys were tough, but I would like beat them in striking. And then I remember one of these guys, he took my back and I stood up and I jumped to land on my back. Like in my head, I was thinking to like land on his head, you know, like, That was gonna get me out of the choke.
Right.
Of course he choked me. But then I got up really quick and I was like, you know, let's go again. You know, I liver kicked him, knocked him out. Knocked the other guy out by a head kick. And then, like, the trainer there that was my coach for a long time, Hashim Al-Khara, which is, by a coincidence, he's returning to MMA from 2012. He's returning this December in the Brave Cage. He saw the potential in me, and he's like, you know, you're really good. You know, you're still young. Just, you know, keep coming, you know, and I want to get you into MMA. And then it was just like a couple weeks later, he calls me and he's like, yo, you want to fight? And, you know, I was like sleeping. I was like, nah, not today. You know, I'm tired. He's like, no, I mean, fight. Like, in 10 days from now, someone got injured and they need a replacement at your weight class. And I got up like, what? Like 10 days? MMA? The TV? Like these guys? Of course, you know, I was young and crazy. I didn't think about anything. I was just like, yes. Like I said, yes. I went and I told my father. I was kind of nervous. I was like, yo, man, remember the people we watch on TV? Well, they want me to fight there in 10 days. And I was worried, you know, I didn't know what he was going to say. And he just started shouting like, yeah, go for it. Let's do this. It's about time, you know, and I was excited. I got in there, you know, still that new kid, you know, still in high school. I got in the fight, first round TKO, I win. And then just after that, you know, I was just known as like the youngest MMA fighter there. All the media, I started getting a lot of media attention. And, you know, fight after fight, the first year, I got them all knockouts. They were all knockouts, and I got the title, still 17 years old. And, you know, just from then until now, like, I'm always known as, like, the, you know, hardworking prospect that's always hungry for more. Like, I never want to fight and just said I want to sit down and relax. And yeah, every time I fight, I want to fight again, like, right after. So, you know, it's a passion I have. It's a business I do. It's my career. It's my life. It's everything in my life. You know, evolves around fighting. So I'm looking to stay in this for the long term, and I really enjoy it.
Now, at 17 years old, you talked a little bit about it. You kind of hit the ground running because you entered into the Desert Force Featherweight tournament to crown the featherweight champion, and you stopped all of your opponents. How did that feel, finally getting those first few professional mixed martial arts wins under your belt, and it came with the title at the end as well?
You know, it was great. It was like a movie, you know, like things were just happening for me. Like, you know, I weren't even expecting them coming, but, you know, I was always working hard. Like, even between my fights, when I had layoffs, I would always train hard as if I had a fight. You know, all my career since I started until now, no one has ever motivated me or tried to tell me to train. You know, it's always people trying to tell me to, you know, calm down, you know, take it easy. Ever since I started, even until now, like, people just sometimes be like, you know, calm down, you know, you're going too hard, you're training too much, but, you know, I know myself, I know my body and what I'm capable of doing, so it was a big thing for me, but again, I'm never satisfied with, you know, just winning. I always want more. So, like, I won my first fight, I need to win my second fight, and then my third was, like, the title. I want to win the title, and I want to defend it, and it was just always more and more. Like, I was never satisfied with, like, just a win I had or a title I had. That it just made me settle. I always look for, you know, getting something higher and bigger.
And you won the title, you had opportunity to defend it, and then you experienced the first setback in your professional career. How did that affect you as a fighter? Are you one of those guys who take the approach that, you know, let me get this first loss out of the way early in my career and move on? Did it motivate you more? How did it affect your career?
Yeah, so first, you know, I won the title, then I defended it once, and then when I went to defend it the second time, I lost, and that was my first loss in my career, and to be honest...
And the only loss to this point.
Yeah, the only loss, and to be honest, I was, like, very heartbroken, I was very depressed, it was really, like, it was the worst things that ever happened to me, but yet at the same time, it was the best things that ever happened to me. You know, like, I never took my opponent lightly. I never took my camp lightly, you know. But at the same time, it just made me, like, make sure I never want to go through that again, you know. So, you know, each camp, I made sure that, not only am I working hard, but I'm working smart. I'm making sure I'm taking care of my recovery very good, taking care of, like, my cardio, my sparring, my wrestling, my jiu-jitsu. I never want to experience that loss again. Even though you learn from your losses, I could still learn from my wins. I don't believe, like, you really need to lose to learn from them, but I do feel like each athlete needs at least one loss, you know, just to always put him on check, put him on point, keep him humble. For me, that loss, it was the worst thing at that point, but then I learned that it was one of the best things that ever happened to me, because, like, after that, I was always, like, super motivated. Even if I win, I still remember, like, hey, you know, you could still lose. You don't want to go through that again, so make sure you do this, this, this. So, yeah, definitely for me, that the only loss I had was a big motivation. And my only problem back then was I wanted to get back to fighting as soon as possible. Mm-hmm. And the promotion wouldn't give me a fight until 6 months later when I was able to finally redeem myself. But, yeah, I was looking to get back in there the next week, the next month. Like, each event, I was like, put me on, because I really, you know. And for me, that loss.
Guy,
you know,
who loves the fight game, you know.
yeah, but, you know, for me, I felt like I didn't even deserve that loss. Because I felt like, you know, it was one of the easiest opponents I ever faced in my career. One of the laziest guys, you know, one of... Like, really, it was like the easiest opportunity for me to ever win a fight was against that guy. And, you know, I didn't even like the stoppage. It was like a 30-second stoppage. And, you know, nothing in that fight, you know, it made sense to me. But, you know, it is what it is. And I have to be very professional and not be emotional. I have to, like, separate my emotions from, you know, what's actually happening. And what actually happened was, I lost, and I had to deal with it, you know, so I couldn't just be sitting around making excuses, and I had to just, you know, move on.
And you did eventually bounce back right after with another victory before leaving the Desert Force organization. Before that, you had all six of your fights in Desert Force with 4 stoppages, 5-1 record, and then you got the call up to Brave. Talk a little bit about the opportunity with Brave, how that came about, and did you have any idea the promotion would blow up as big as it has?
Yeah, so, you know, I was with Desert Force for a long time, and then I had a long setback. Like, I fought in, my last fight in Desert Force was in May 2015, and then my fight in Brave was in September 2016. That was over a year, and the reason was Desert Force was really messing up with the guys, like, you know, because I was one of the first fighters to start with Desert Force, so I was one of the first fighters to receive the new contract, and that's why I did not re-sign with Desert Force. There was a lot of, you know, contract problems, and there's a lot of pay problems. Like, I think after their last show, which was in December 2016 until now, and I think until forever, none of the fighters from that show ever got paid, so... I saw a lot of things coming from Desert Force, and I didn't like it at all. And I was told them, if you want me to continue fighting with you guys, you need to pay this, do this, this, that. And, you know, the contract never came through. So I decided to just do a lot of jiu-jitsu tournaments for that year and just stay busy training, even though I didn't have any fights, you know. But I wasn't going to be desperate and just sign a dumb contract. And that's how I was one of the first Arabs to also sign with Brave, because, you know, Brave was the upcoming promotion. They were looking for, like, stars in the Middle East, and I was a free agent at the time, and I was connected with Brave. You know, they were telling me how big of a promotion they will be and, you know, their vision and stuff, and I believe them, because for me, every time, you know, I used to tell people things, they think I'm crazy, like, you know, the dreams I have, the things I say. And it takes me time, but with hard work, I always achieve what I say I wanted to achieve. And I'm not even done with everything. I'm still on my way to a lot of things. So I believed in Muhammad Shahid. I believed in their vision, and I'm seeing it happen. And even though they're really big right now, they're still not as big as they want to be. Like, you know, I compare myself to Brave. Like, you know, they're just always hungry for more. They want to get bigger and bigger. They don't want to be the biggest promotion in Bahrain. They don't want to be the biggest promotion in the Middle East. You know, they're trying to dominate the world, the MMA world. So I do believe in Brave a lot. And, you know, especially me traveling the world, you know, talking to MMA fighters. You know, where are you from, where you fight? And I say Brave Combat Federation. And a lot of guys are knowing Brave right now. So, you know, 2 years and, you know, 18 events and this much growth and that many countries, it's a really big deal, you know.
Right, right, and you can really see they're growing at a fast pace consistently, and they're starting to pick up bigger names now. Like Bubba Jenkins just won the featherweight title. You have Vilimirad Alkasov fighting for the flyweight title. You have Jeremy Kennedy under the umbrella. Now they're really going after quality talent everywhere you look, and they're getting these television deals, these broadcast partners, and everything. And really, the future is bright for Brave, and I'm really excited to see where they're going to be in the next couple of years. And you're really in an interesting position because you're in a position like a Patricio Pitbull or Michael Chandler, in the sense that when they signed on with Bellator, they were young, they had experience, they had potential, and they grew with the promotion and became the faces of the promotion. So, you know, you're really poised to become the face of Brave right now. Tell me a little bit about the responsibilities that comes with something like that.
I mean, I believe I'm already the face of Brave. You know, I was the first main event in Brave. I was the first Arab fighter, you know, for them. And I believe, like, since day one, I was the face of Brave. I just didn't care less about the title, you know, as long as I was just winning a lot of fights. I was just fighting fight after fight. That's what I was just most concerned about. I was just staying busy, not really about, you know, grabbing the title after, like, just entering. But, you know, I never asked for the title, and I really just left Brave no choice but to give me the title shot as being the most person deserving it. And for me, it's not just a big responsibility for being the face of Brave, you know, like, you know, Brave at the end of the day, you know, let's be professional, let's talk business. Brave at the end of the day is not for me. It's not, you know, I'm just a fighter for Brave. So, you know, faces come and go for a promotion. You know, we see that a lot in the UFC, how one day it's Ronda Rousey, one day it's Jon Jones, one day it's McGregor, like, every day it's a different
one day
fighter,
is
you know?
Even the Murgamidoff. Like,
yeah,
well.
Yeah. So you have to be smart about that when you say, like, face of Brave. I'm not going to take it personal. I know that I'm going to be the face of Brave as long as, you know, I give Brave what they want. And that is, you know, me coming up, showing up, fighting, winning the fights, entertaining the crowd. So as long as I keep doing that, you know, I will be the face of Brave. But, you know, most importantly for me, you know, I want to be, like, you know, the face of my own. Like, I want to make sure I keep winning fights for myself, you know, for my people. That's something very important and dear to me, you know, my fellow Palestinians and Jordanians and, you know, teammates, family, supporters. You know, I fight for these people because, you know, I know they're very loyal to me, and no matter what would happen, they're always going to be there on my side, and they were there before and they will be there after. So I'm really excited to fight for Brave all the time, especially in the presence of Sheikh Khaled Haradah. Sheikh Khaled, I love fighting in front of him. It gives me, like, a motivation. You know, it's a big deal whenever, you know, you're fighting for a promotion and the owner of the promotion is there and, you know, you really want to impress them. You want to make sure, like, you know, they're...
And you're fighting, you're literally fighting in front of royalty as well.
yeah, exactly. So, you know, every time I walk in the cage, I make sure I know where he's at, you know, There was one fight, I think it was the one in Bahrain last year, where, like, when me and the opponent were in the corner, and I was, like, in the clinch, his back was on the cage, and I was, like, facing Sheikh. So, like, while I was hitting my knees and elbows, I was looking at him and smiling and kind of, like, giving him a wink. And he was, like, pointing to me, like, you know, focus on your fight, you know? And mm-hmm. I was just enjoying it. When I'm in that cage, I really enjoy fighting, so... You know, it doesn't take away my focus, but I just enjoy it.
And you've won all of your fights in Brave and impressive fashion, really. The first two fights, you stopped your opponents, and that was at featherweight. And your next fight, which is, like, in my opinion, I don't know if you agree, your toughest test against Eric Da Silva, but that was at lightweight. What made you decide to make the move from featherweight to lightweight? I mean,
well,
because
actually,
it's had an
yeah.
interesting time because you moved up to lightweight and faced one of your most experienced competitors.
Yeah, so actually I was at lightweight since today I moved to Braves. So my last fight, I thought it was in Desert Force. Mm-hmm. And the reason why I moved up a weight class is because I started off as a featherweight when I was 16 years old, before MMA. And I used to weigh like what a featherweight, you know, or like a bit over a featherweight would weigh. But, you know, I was training a lot. I was eating good. I was very healthy. And we're talking about 16 years old. My body was just growing. So each year, each cut would just get a bit harder. You know, my first, like, first three or four fights, each fight I would really, like, have to cut an extra 5 pounds than the camp before. I was just growing rapidly and gaining weight, you know, gaining muscle, you know. So once I reached 5'1", which was in Desert Force, like, that was my last cut to featherweight, and that sucked. Like, I hated cutting to featherweight that fight because it was just, you know, a lot. And I felt like, you know, on fight day, even though I would perform good in front of the people, but in me, like in my head, in my body, I knew I wasn't 100% like how I should be. Even though I was doing a very good weight cut process, I was doing a good recovery, but still, you know, that wasn't healthy. And I was, at that time, I think I was 20. I was 20 and I was like, you know what? I want to fight for like another, you know, 10 to 15 years at least. So why should I be destroying my body for now if each fight is really affecting me? I want to be healthy and I just want to start fighting lightweight after this. And then people are like, oh, you're going to be small. People are going to be bigger and all. And I was like, you know, I feel like whenever I'm healthy, my body's healthy, my mind is healthy, I could perform much better against a tougher guy than when I perform at a lower weight class against a smaller guy and I'm just not 100%. So, and I did feel that, you know, each fight at lightweight, you know, I'm not saying the weight cut is easy, but I'm just saying it's exactly where it needs to be. Like, it's just on point where, you know, I cut the weight and I make weight and I get back there 100%. Like I said, you know, I'm still growing. Like, since I started lightweight until now, I'm still growing. But, you know, I learned a lot, you know, so I have a good weight training program, good rehydration program. So for me, I feel like lightweight is what I'm going to always continue, unless they bring these new weight classes where I would say, like, you know, 150. But 145 is something I don't think I should ever let my body go through. Maybe, like, 150 is something I could consider in the future if it's something that will ever be there.
The talk of the town now is the UFC adding a 165-pound division, so that would be something if Bray was to implement it, you would be interested in maybe down the road.
No, 165 is already there. I think they're going to add a 165.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so, 165, yeah.
So, yeah, they have one. I think that's a very good idea because there's a really big difference. There's a big gap between welterweight and lightweight, and I think that is a weight class that they should add.
Yeah, because if they add the 165 division, they would probably bump welterweight up to 175, which would make sense.
Yeah. So let's just keep them on fives, like 35, 45, 55, 65, 75, and then, you know, you get back to the 85 regular.
Right.
You know, I say, like, 85 and 205, you know, that's it. Like, you don't need, like, once you get to, like, light heavyweight, middleweight, people don't really cut weight anyways. Mm-hmm. Not a lot. You know, usually it's the lighter guys. And I would say mostly featherweights, lightweights, and welterweights cut the most weight.
And you talked a lot about your improvement technically, but your in-cage IQ seems to be growing greatly as well. We saw a lot of that in your fight with Eric Da Silva when you were hurting him on the feet, and he was able to eventually take your back, get Mel and threaten you a little bit, and you kept yourself safe. Talk a little bit about that experience and how you were able to survive and eventually stop him in a second.
So, what really, you know, I always wanted to be smart. I always wanted to be really good. I always train hard. Like, wherever I was in my career, I was always training with the best. But what really did a big change in my MMA career and skill level was when I moved to Dallas, Texas from Jordan. I was in Jordan from the beginning of my career up until my first fight in Brave. Like, I fought my first fight in Brave. And then I moved to America, and that's when I started training with Fortis MMA in Dallas, Texas. And, man, like, the things I go through here, I can't even explain to you how worse they are than any fight I've ever been to in my life. Like, I'm just gonna give you a very short example about yesterday's training session. Oh my god. Like, I don't even know what to tell you. Like, I can swear to you that no fight I've ever been to, no matter how tough the opponent was maybe tougher than yesterday, right? or any day in this camp over here at Fortis MMA. The things I go through, the positions I go through, the fighters I go with, you know, I spar with, and I'm not talking about, you know, me being fresh and fighting a fresh guy. I'm talking about after I'm tired, after I think the session is done, going with a fresh, you know, UFC guy, and, you know, he's trying to take my head off or trying to knock me out or, you know, trying to submit me, and I just have to work. So after working here at Fortis, a lot of the things I work in the cage is not always planned. It's really like just muscle memory, and just I've been through each position so many times that even if I'm fatigued, even if I'm tired, I will know how to, you know, I'll know how to continue on from there without actually thinking. Just in being in every position so many times and in so many bad positions, I'm able to, like, just adapt and improvise right away. So the fight with Eric Da Silva, you know, it went exactly as I thought it would. The only reason he took my back is because I gave him my back. I did something very stupid. I was on the cage, and I wanted to hit him with a back-spinning elbow, but I forgot my arm as the underhook. He had overhooked my arm. So when I turned, I basically just gave him my back. Like, even though I knew it was there, I thought I felt like with my turn, my hand's going to slip out of his overhook, but he still held on, and he jumped on my back. And, you know, once he took my back, I was very calm. I was just like, yeah, whatever, you're a black belt, but I've been with, like, tougher guys than you, and I was tired. This is still the first round. And then, you know, I got off, you know, he was on the back. I gave him the mount instead of, you know, taking my back, and I didn't let him land one punch on the ground and pound. You know, each fight, each shot, I would see it, and I would move, and I would actually hit him back from the bottom. And I heard my corner scream the time. They were saying, like, 20 seconds. So I didn't even bother trying to get up, you know, and waste my energy. I was just like, you know, let me avoid any possible damage and come back in the second round and finish him. And that's what happened.
And that was a very, very impressive performance because, like, we all knew you were already technical, but you showed in cage smarts as well, too. And then you went on to dominate Charlie Leary to the point where one of the judges scored it 3-8 rounds, another one scored it 2-8 rounds, and one judge scored it 1-8 round. And that really got people to talking about they wanted to see you and Usman Azaitar fight for the lightweight title, who was the champion at the time, but he seemed to have no interest in that. Can you talk a little bit about that? That was an odd situation.
Yeah, it was very weird for me. Like, I was supposed to fight in September, and then Brave contacted me and said, hey, we want to take you off the September card. We want you to fight Azaitar for the title in November. I was like, I mean, okay, whatever you guys want. Then, you know, I was like, you know, hey, you know, what's going on? There's no reply. And then it was like 4 weeks, you know, Brave calling him out. You know, I told him, like, you know, what's up? Let's fight. Never replied, never answered. And until now, like, from his end, never said anything. So I don't know what it is. Politics, scared, not, like, you know, afraid of losing a fight because he's 11-0. For me, what I think exactly happened is that, you know, he's 11-0, top-ranked lightweight, top-ranked welterweight, and, you know, he knows I'm a very bad matchup for him. So I think he has a couple more months to finish his Brave contract. Me, personally, I think he's going to try to wait out his Brave contract. He doesn't mind if he's not going to fight for a year or two, whatever. He's just going to wait for the Brave contract to finish and then try to, you know, get on the UFC just like his brother's in the UFC. So, and they have a good manager, too. So I think that's what they're trying to do. And to be honest, that is a smart decision, you know, not to fight me and to try to get in the UFC because I guarantee you if that fight was going to happen.
That's a really smart decision. That's something I consider, too, because like you said, he's unbeaten. He's looked impressive in his fights. And why would you risk a stylistic nightmare, really, if you can like get out of your contract and move to the UFC, if that's the ultimate goal for that.
And I don't see Azaita as a guy that, you know, he needs to fight, you know, like, you know, I just feel like he does it for fun, you know, like, he has the money, he has the fame, so he's not really doing it for either, he's just doing it for fun, for more fame, I guess, you know, just...
And you can see that when you go and fight in a division you don't hold the title in, really.
I don't know. So, you know, I'm just focused on myself right now.
Right.
You know, I kept saying, you know, who's the opponent? And then I knew myself, like, you know, if Azaita is not going to show up, well, it's definitely going to be the interim champ. And there we are. It's me and Lucas Martins right now at Brace 16.
And Lucas Martin is definitely a beast. I heard rumors that you would be fighting Luan Santiago and Martins would move back down to featherweight, but that wasn't the case. And this is really a tough matchup stylistically for you. He's a guy that was really making moves in the UFC before he left the organization. It wasn't a situation where he lost and they cut him. He won his last fight in the UFC and started winning more on the regional scene, and then he got signed to Brave, and just everywhere he's a dangerous fighter. What do you know about your opponent, and what are you expecting?
So really, I just watched two of his fights. One was a Brave featherweight fight, and one was his fight against Luan. Really, what I can say about Lucas is that, you know, he's smart. You know, he's smart in his fighting. He's very picky. You know, he's extremely picky in what he does. You know, he picks his shots. He picks whenever he wants to strike. He picks whenever he wants to grapple. I'm really excited for this fight because I really see it as one of my toughest fights. You know, like, I see him like he has, you know, good striking, good wrestling, good jiu-jitsu, and I see myself exactly like good striking, good wrestling, good jiu-jitsu. And, you know, sometimes, not always, but sometimes I would have a certain plan set in mind, like, okay, I'm going to take him down, or okay, I'm going to strike with this guy and avoid the takedowns. But with this guy, you know, I'm just really excited to see what's going to happen because, you know, we're both going to come out there striking, wrestling, and grappling. Like, you know, if I'm going to punch him, I'm going to punch him. If I could wrestle him, I'm going to wrestle him. If I'm going to choke him out, I'm going to choke him out. And I know he's going to do the same. I know he has the exact same thinking. Like, he's not going to come in here with a one-dimensional, you know, way to try to win the fight. And, you know, for me, the biggest aspect in this fight is not, you know, who has more experience, more fights. In the end, it's going to be who wants this fight more, who wants this win more, who really worked hard in the last month, you know, leading up to this fight. And man, I've been working hard. Like, I've been in camp since, like, I don't know what to say, like, since July, because I was supposed to fight in September. And when they said, we're going to bump it 2 months, like, imagine you're, like, at the end of camp, and they tell you you're going to fight, instead of in 3 weeks from now, you're going to fight in, like, 2 months and a half, or whatever it was at that time. And that just made me go, like, damn, no break, let's go. And not only no break, let's go, but we're preparing for a title fight, 5-round fight, so I had to bring it up even more. So, you know, preparation has been going great. I'm really excited for this fight. You know, it's my first time doing 5 rounds. It's not his first time doing 5 rounds. So, you know, he's been there before, but, you know, if it's one thing I'm not worried about, it's my cardio. You know, alhamdulillah, I've been working a lot on my cardio, and I've always had a good cardio base. So, really, I feel like this fight is like a matter of seconds. Like, you know, like, winning from here, and then boom, something happens. And I definitely think at the end of the day, I'm going to get that victory because I'm working really hard for it, and I need that victory so bad.
And that victory over Lucas Martins will earn you the lightweight title, and you would be the second Jordanian fighter to hold a title for Brave, as Jarrell Hussein Al-Salali just won the welterweight title. But if you think about his performance over Carson Harris?
His performance was very good. Like, Jarrell is one of these guys, you know, they're always in constant improvement. you know, he was very busy. He always had fight after fight, no injuries, so that's a good thing. He's still up and coming. Like, you know, I would say he's one of the top welterweights in the Middle East. And, you know, he did very good. I'm not taking anything away from his performance. He did very good, exactly what he should have. But I really wasn't impressed by his opponent either. I felt like he had entered the octagon in a very losing mentality. Like, he started off slow. I felt like he was lost. Like, the first minute, you know, he was walking in the cage, he was lost. And I think that's because all of his fights were in Brazil, and this was his first fight abroad, and everything was just different for him. I don't know. That could be the case. You know, there's a million things that could, you know, go on with a fighter. So I don't know what was the explanation for that. But other than that, you know, Jalas performed exactly how he should have and executed his game plan, like, 100%.
And talk a little bit about your heritage. You're very proud. You touched on that a little earlier about, you know, being a Jordanian and Palestinian fighter. And we see that when you come out with the hybrid Jordanian-Palestinian flick. Talk a little bit about that.
Yeah, so I'm originally Palestinian, and I was always true to my roots since I was a kid. You know, I'm an American citizen as well. I'm a Jordanian citizen as well. But, you know, I'm always true to my my origin nationality. I love it. I love representing Palestine because the hope I give back to my people, they don't really have a voice. You know, the media is always against them, and it's just crazy. So I feel like when I fight, you know, behind each punch, behind each throw I hit, there's like a big voice for the Palestinians. Like, you know, they are very proud of me. I'm very proud of them. And I fight for them, you know, for people to know the story. You know, this happens a lot. You know, I raise a Palestine flag. People are like, hey, what's that flag? Why do you raise it? Why is that? And then that gives me the chance to tell my story, to talk about my people. And that's one of the main reasons I do it, is because I give a voice to our people. And it's something I will continue to do, and something I'm very proud of. And again, I also raise a Jordanian flag because I used to live there, and I'm also from there. And Jordanians and Palestinians are like brothers. So I hybrid the flag and connect it as one to show like a union of Jordan and Palestine. And you can tell they're like almost the same flag, except the Jordanian flag has a star on it.
Hmm. That's amazing. That's amazing. And we're hearing some horrible news out of Jordan right now with all the storms that just passed and all the deaths that happened over there. What is the message you want to send to your brothers and sisters in Jordan right now?
You know, just stay strong. You know, everything happens for a reason. Like, this just came out of nowhere. But, you know, in these hard times, you know, we need to all support each other. Other than that, there's a lot of problems going on in Jordan. But, you know, I'm really proud of Jordanians, how once something like this happens, a crisis, everyone stands together. You know, they stand strong and support each other. So, you know, I just want everyone to stay strong and stay safe, and try to help as much as they can if there's a way to as well.
And you don't just say that. You back it up because you were involved in relief efforts for Hurricane Harvey victims as well. Can you talk a bit about that and your efforts in the community in Dallas?
Yeah, of course. I mean, since I was a kid, I always loved to give back to the community. I'm not going to lie. In my MMA career, I had a lot of people always, you know, help me out. And I was never really able to pay them back directly. So the way I do it is like, you know, people do good to you, you do good to people. You don't have to go back to the same people. You don't always have to give back the same people something they gave you. It's like a circle in life. Like, you know, you do good to people, good things happen to you some way or another. And I believe in that a lot. You know, I used to help, you know, hurricane victims back in 2005 when I was a kid with my father. Hurricane Katrina, you know, our house, we had about like six families inside. And we would just, you know, feed and provide shelter and, you know, go around the community, support everyone that needed help. And, you know, but right here, last year, Hurricane Harvey, that was just something else. Like, you know, it's really bad. It's not because I'm an MMA fighter. It's not because I have a platform. It's really bad if you're a human being and someone needs help and you can actually help, but you don't. You know, I just feel like it's very disgusting. You don't need to be a celebrity. You don't need to be a fighter. You don't need to be anything in order to help people. So, I mean, there's a lot of things I do. I don't really tell people about it, but the things I do and people know about just because, you know, there was media there. I mean, it just so happened that there was media there and I wanted to help someone. But, you know, it's, you know, I believe that everyone should be helping no matter if the media is looking or not. You know, just you feel good. And that's something I love to do. I love to help people out, you know, if it's like support or helping out with the hand or with money or whatever it is. I feel good about myself. And in a lot of parts of my career, I don't know, I feel like some of the biggest things that happened to me, good, were after, you know, doing, like, good things to other people. So sometimes I think of it, like, as, like, a business aspect. Like, okay, do good to people, good things are going to happen to you, you know? Like, and I truly believe in that, you know, just always be positive, do good to people, and good things are going to happen to you. And, you know, that's just what I'm trying to spread, you know, on my Instagram stories and stuff, always trying to spread love, always trying to spread positivity between people, because wherever you go, people are going to be like, yeah, life sucks, I want to move from here, this place is better, and everyone is saying that in every country, you know, so I just feel like, you know, if you're just satisfied and you just, you know, just make yourself satisfied and just be happy, be positive, I feel like, you know, everyone's going to be having a better time, and yeah, that's about it.
And we're almost done here, Abdul Karim. I thank you so much for your time, my brother. Before we go, still continuing on the youth community efforts, you're really deeply involved in anti-bullying campaigns and everything in the Dallas area. I know one of your students, I believe her name is Rihanna, whatever, suffers from autism and has experienced bullying in school, too. I know I'm a father who has a child who's visually impaired and suffers with ADHD, and she struggles in school as well. But you really turned this child's life around. Can you talk a bit about that? I feel like what you're doing, it's not getting enough coverage, and I really appreciate you, my brother, for what you're doing.
Yeah. So, really, I don't care about the coverage. I only liked it at that time because of the extra boost in confidence it gave to the student, and especially that girl, Ryan, you know, when I sent her mother the article and, like, her videos, it made her even more confident and, like, a superstar in her school. So, you know, she came from being bullied, being shy. She was super quiet, super shy. You know, she wouldn't do anything. She was just very shy. I would talk to her. It's like she wasn't paying attention in the beginning. But then, like, a year, throughout the course of a year, just 180 degrees transformation. She's, like, very hyper, very talkative. She defends herself. She defends students in her class. And that's something I was always talking about. You know, since I was a kid, like I said, I was always athletic. I was always, like, you know, that muscular kid or that strong kid. And I was always getting in fights. But believe it or not, none of the fights I was ever getting into were me bullying anyone. It was always me defending someone. And that would always bother the school. They'll be like, you know, we're the school. I'm the principal. Tell your teacher. We'll handle this. And I'd always say, like, as a kid, like, as a small kid, I'd be like, no, you won't. You know, what are you going to do? You're just going to call his parents or what? I'm gonna have to punish him myself. So as a kid, I was always, like, being called into the office, but it was because I was hitting kids, bullying other kids. I never liked bullies ever in my life. And I used to feel like, you know, if there's the strongest kid in class, it's me. And I'm not bullying anyone. So what would give you the right to bully another kid, you know? So I was always like, you know, I'm stronger than you. And I bully the bullies. That's what I always say. Like, I will bully the bullies. And always, you know, stand up for the girls, stand up for, like, the weaker boys, or, you know, the people that were being bullied. So when I grew up, this passion grew up with me. And it also started when my niece came home once crying, saying that, you know, she was bullied and, you know, someone said something mean to her. And that's whenever I was like, okay, that's it. You know, I'm going to start teaching you. And then I was just like, well, let me make a class for all the kids her age as well. And I started teaching a kids class. And, you know, that's how it all started off together. And I'm really happy with the program. I'm going to restart it in January after this fight because I see a lot of positive results, you know, in school. The kids, they have more discipline. anti-bullying, like to have more confidence, you know, no more trouble. Like, I feel like bullying comes from, like a deficiency in confidence. When you're confident that, you know, you're strong and no one could mess with you and stuff, you don't want to mess with anyone. Like, it's just, I feel like, just a deficiency people have, where they just want to show off. So I feel like martial arts not only helped me in my life, but so many other people I know. And, I just wish, you know, everyone can try this out. Like, one of my biggest things when I'm starting a school program is parents coming up to me. And I hate when they say this, but I always have to talk with them about this. They're like, yeah, you know, I want to put my son into sports, but I'm scared I put him into martial arts because he's already crazy and he's already rough. So I don't want him to get into martial arts because then he's just going to be more rough and more aggressive. And I'm like, this is the stupidest thing I've ever heard. Like, the reason your son is aggressive is because he's not doing martial arts. But like me, like, martial arts saved me. Like, sparring, training. Like, training is so humbling, you know? Having someone to make you do push-ups when you can't even breathe for air, making you do more rounds, you know? You're not aggressive anymore. It's all very controlled. You're very disciplined. That's what martial arts is about. It's about respect and discipline. And it really bothers me when some parents start telling me, like, oh, I don't want to put my son into this because he's aggressive. Let me just go put him in soccer. Yeah, I'll put him in soccer or basketball. No. No.
Well, I want to end this on a high note, Abdul-Karim. Recently, the UFC and ONE made a deal to where they would trade Demetrius Mighty Mouse Johnson for Ben Askren. So if Brave could trade for any other fighter in the sport of mixed martial arts, who would you like to see them trade for?
That was very interesting. I mean, I don't know. Damn. I don't know. I mean, I know this sounds crazy, but, you know, as an MMA fighter, I'm not really a fan of, like, MMA fighters. I don't know how to explain to you. Like, I don't really watch UFC or I don't really watch fights.
You do it more for the competition, not necessarily to
I fight and I don't watch my videos. Like, I fight and that's it. It's over. Like, I'll watch it once after the fight maybe, and then that's it. I'll watch my opponent's tape to just get an idea of what I'm going to do. I'll watch my teammates fight because I love watching my teammates fight. You know, I'll watch my teammates' opponent's video so I can help my teammate. But I don't really, like, go, like, oh, yeah, did you watch the fights last night? Yeah, let's watch these fights. Oh, I'm a fan of this fighter. I'm a fan of that. Even though I would watch, like, big events. Like let's say, for example, the McGregor fights or the Habib fights. It's not because I'm a fan of really the guys, but it's just a big event. Like, everyone, you know, what's more cooler than, like, hanging around with your friends, you know, eating some good food, watching the fight? It's just like going out, you know, for me. I watch, like, just the biggest events, and I watch, like, the main card, too. I wouldn't even watch all the fights. But if we were to talk about, you know, MMA fighters, I would say that before I got into MMA, I was always watching Anderson Silva, George St. Pierre, and Jose Aldo. So those three were my favorite. Right now, I do like Khabib. Like, I like Khabib. Not just because of his fighting style, but just because of his overall, you know, personnel, like his character, his humbleness. And to me, one of the most important things for fighters is to be humble. You know, I don't care how good you are, but if you're stuck up and arrogant, you know, I would never be a fan of that fighter. So, you know, Khabib, I see him, you know, he's 27-0, undefeated, very humble. You know, he has that same, like, father-son relationship I have with my father, as him being, like, my coach and supporter. You know, just the things, the way he deals with the sport is not like he's doing it just for money. He's doing it for respect, you know, the religion and everything. I have a lot of respect for that. So
yeah, he's always said in interviews that religion is his number one fighting, always comes after that. So, and that comes out in his demeanor and how he approaches all the situations that he's been exposed to thus far.
Yeah, exactly.
And before we get out of here, Abdul Karim, what do you want to tell the fans about? What should they expect on November 16th?
Oh, man. So let me tell you something, guys. I've been working extremely, extremely hard for this fight. And I'm talking about jiu-jitsu, wrestling, striking, boxing, Muay Thai, everything. The best way to put it is that this is going to be a very high-paced fight. You know, I can tell that Lucas has very good cardio, and I like to believe myself I have, you know, some of the best cardio in the lightweight division. So this is going to be very technical and high-paced. You know, no one's going to be laying around. No one's going to be just waiting. It's really going to be a race of who can beat the living hell out of each other for 25 minutes the best. You know, and that's, to me, that's if it went 25 minutes. I do believe I could get the finish before the fight reaches the end of the five rounds. But, you know, if I don't get the finish, I do believe I will put on a pace that he hasn't dealt with before. He's dealt with tough competition, but at the same time, he's never dealt with me. And I feel like I'm a bad matchup for Lucas, even though he's a very tough opponent. You know, we talked about that. And I only said that just because, you know, I'll be dumb if I don't respect my opponents and say, you know, what they're good at and what they're not good at. So he does have some weaknesses, but he also does have some strength. And I will expose his weaknesses on November 16th, according to the game plan I am working on.
And before I let you go, give a shout-out to your sponsors. I know a lot of people have been helping you prepare for this fight, so let them be known as well. Give a shout-out to everyone.
Yeah, definitely. Thank you very much. I want to thank my sponsors, Swole O'Clock, Newer Vitamins, Two Tough to Tap Fight Gear, Legacy Dental, Fortis MMA, Reform Ortho and Rehab. These guys always, you know, support me. I also want to thank a sponsor in Bahrain, Vape in Bahrain. This is going to be my first fight working with these guys. Sparta Tourism in Travel. And, yeah, that's about it. You know, these guys are really good to me. And I just want to thank everyone for their support, be it sponsors or fans or family, teammates, coaches. I wanted to thank everyone for their support, you know, throughout my MMA career until where I am now and until where I will be in the future.
That was Abdul Karim Al-Sawadi. He will be taking on Lucas Martins for the vacant Brave Combat Federation lightweight title on November 16th at Brave CF 18. Abdul Karim, thank you for your time, my man.
Thank you, sir. Take care.